This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Enterprise Biz Bytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I am Rich Bradbury, and I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong.
We're going to be with you for around about an hour today. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can get us via WhatsApp if you want to take part in the conversation. That is 018-789-8899. Get us on Twitter as well if you'd like to. We're over at BFM Radio. Now, on the show today, we're going to be talking about branding that's gone wrong. More specifically, rebranding gone wrong. And to do this, we may have the perfect case study. Meta.
We're now looking at and reporting on our business as two different segments, one for our family of apps and one for our work on future platforms. And as part of this, it is time for us to adopt a new company brand to encompass everything that we do. To reflect who we are and what we hope to build, I am proud to announce that starting today, our company is now Meta. Our mission remains the same. It's still about bringing people together. Our apps and their brands, they're not changing either. And we are still the company that designs technology around people. But now we have a new North Star to help bring the metaverse to life. And we have a new name that reflects the full breadth of what we do and the future that we want to help build. From now on, we're going to be metaverse first, not Facebook first.
Now, if you didn't recognize that voice, it was, of course, Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Meta, formerly known as Facebook, announcing to the world their recent rebranding exercise.
Yes, so Facebook changed its corporate name to Meta as part of a major rebrand in October 2021. The company said that it would better encompass what it does, such as it broadens its reach beyond social media into areas like virtual reality. Now, this change does not apply to its individual platforms, such as Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, only the parent company that owns them. Yes.
And the move follows a series of negative stories about Facebook based on documents leaked by an ex-employee. Frances Haugen has accused the company of putting, quote, profits over safety. More on Frances and her accusations a little bit later on the show. But coming back to our story.
Yes. So at a virtual all-hands meeting last Tuesday, Facebook escalated its attempts to not only rebrand itself, but also manage its demoralized and often adversarial workforce with a new set of corporate values derived from a naval slogan. So Zuck held up the slide deck showing new corporate values, which were Meta, Metaverse, Me. Employees would be expected to first prioritize Meta, the company, followed by a person's team, which they're calling MetaMates, followed by the individual, me. He added that the company's corporate values would now be live in the future and be direct and respect your colleagues, which was previously be open. And years ago, the company's slogan of move fast and break things was changed to just move fast. Last week, the company announced it would now be move fast together.
So these changes to the corporate values were, ridiculed by some employees internally who described them as a corporate indoctrination and a little bit out of touch. Facebook did not immediately have a comment, or Meta, rather. In a tweet, Facebook CTO Andrew Bosworth has said that the saying Meta, MetaMates, Me was a reference to a naval phrase which Instagram has used for a while. The phrase used by Instagram is ship, shipmates, self. His tweet also said that the term MetaMates was coined by the scholar Douglas Hofstadter after an employee reached out to him for ideas.
The changes reflect Facebook's pursuit of a new identity after years of controversies that have demoralized its workforce. The company changed its name to Meta to help shift the focus to building hardware, a rebranding that followed revelations by a whistleblower that showed how much the company knew about its damage to society, including negatively affecting the body image of young women and allowing a lot of disinformation and misinformation to spread.
Like whistleblower Frances Haugen, these Facebook employees warned about the company's problems for years and no one listened. The town hall meeting was also streamed for the first time on Facebook's virtual reality platform, Horizon Venues. The company is attempting to demonstrate the idea that corporate meetings could be held in virtual reality, starting to use its own town halls as a test case.
Yeah, and Facebook has had long had a workplace culture that has prized openness. But as executives become more paranoid about leaks and reputational damage, that has changed, according to people familiar with the company's practices who spoke on the condition of anonymity to describe internal matters. The company's more than 71,000 employees communicate with each other on Workplace, an internal chat system that looks like Facebook. Mm-hmm. Employees in the past have engaged in deep debates on Workplace about everything from Black Lives Matter to the election and more. They also posted internal research about products and the company's impact on society.
Now, last year, whistleblower Frances Haugen came forward with thousands of company documents that were posted on Workplace showing the company's research into social harms. Since the Haugen revelations, Facebook has made attempts to shut down certain conversations on Workplace, either by closing groups that were open to larger numbers of people or by having communications personnel tell employees that posted critical comments that they were disrespectful. Many point to this rebranding exercise as a move to divert attention away from the trove of negative stories hanging around the company. Critics believe Facebook has done this because the brand has become toxic. Mm-hmm. The company has had multiple hits to its reputation, with the Washington Post reporting that Facebook withheld important information about vaccine misinformation from policymakers during the pandemic.
Yes, and it was the latest in a series of stories based on internal documents leaked by ex-employee Frances Haugen to the media. Among other things, the reports have claimed Facebook sat on research that showed Instagram harmed teenage mental health and struggled to remove hate speech from its platforms outside the US. And Mr. Zuckerberg has described the reports as, quote, a coordinated effort to selectively use leaked documents to paint a false picture of our company.
Mm-hmm. Mm. MetaMates, though?
I hate that so much. I mean, just call them colleagues. Right.
We'd be entermates.
No, thank you.
Right?
No, thank you. I would be inclined to agree from, you know, an outsider's perspective that this seems to just be a lot of smoke to cover or to distract from the real issues that we know Facebook has been facing for a long time. Mm. And, you know, while I do admit that there's elements of the metaverse that I am personally excited for.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think they realize that people can't just continue to sweep their controversies under the rug. Mm-hmm. And just because you change your name does not mean...
I mean, playing devil's advocate, right?
Right.
Is it just bad timing? Because a move like this to rebrand an entire business that's been around for a very long time, you know, it's not something you can do overnight, right?
Yes.
It's like steering an iceberg, I would imagine. There's all the rebranding stuff that has to happen in the background, all of the, the legalese that has to go into doing all of this. It's not something you can just say, okay, tomorrow we're going to be called this.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do that, I guess, but, you know, for somebody like, or for a company like Facebook, you can't just do that. Do you think it's just, I don't know.
I think it's maybe there is bad timing involved, but I also think it's the direction that maybe not the products are going in, but the culture seems to be going in. The mere fact that, you know, right now the debate and the conversation that is happening about, employees and how they should be, approaching the workplace is actually the opposite of that new slogan. Mm-hmm. The slogan says you put the company first above yourself, but the Great Resignation clearly shows that more and more employees are beginning to realize that, you know, you only have one life to live, and are working very hard to move away from, you know, prioritizing a company above all else, including their own personal lives. Mm-mm. So,
I mean, we've seen for years this whole Silicon Valley kind of, you know, you sacrifice yourself for the goal of the company for a long, long time. But then also, we're also seeing other companies in Silicon Valley doing the opposite now, like what you're saying, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, interesting to see how this will go then. Okay, so when we come back, we'll be speaking to a brand advisor and coach, Alina Abdullah, about how to get a rebranding exercise right for all of your stakeholders. Stay with us. We've got some music to take us into the break. We've got Rilo Kiley with Silver Lining. If you'd like to get in touch, 018-789-8899. Twitter, we're at BFM Radio. We'll be right back after these messages.
Stay tuned to Enterprise Biz Bytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Boyish 40-something millionaires. BFM 89.9.
Enterprise Biz Bytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Welcome back, folks, to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong.
Meta, MetaMates and Me, a new set of corporate values announced by Facebook last week, was ridiculed by some of its employees. We've been discussing what went wrong at Meta and why company morale cannot be boosted by a slogan change or a rebranding exercise. I don't know. We've been talking about this very briefly just before the break. And in 2015, we know Google restructured its company, calling their parent firm Alphabet. That name's not really caught on, though, has it? I've never used the term Alphabet.
That's the other thing, right, where, you know, they're not changing the name of the products that have, you know, that are now mainstream or I guess, a household staple, right? But even so, just changing the company name doesn't really, again, detract from what the company's done.
I think people are always going to call it Facebook as
That's the thing, You're always going to be known as the company that has Facebook, basically.
Now, we did say we have somebody to speak with. We have a founder and brand advisor at coach at Yellow Tree Malaysia. It is Alina Abdullah. Now, Yellow Tree are a brand advisory specializing in consultancy and training services. They assist businesses as niche as micro businesses to large SMEs and corporations to help them build a strong brand and marketing foundation. They even model brand models for underserved communities, such as the Orang Kampung and home-based businesses. So, Alina, how much research do you think would have gone into a brand change like Meta? It's a huge company. What might have been the difficulties, the legal implications, things like taxation? Tell us a little bit about that.
We hope that they took the time that they need, as rebranding requires an extensive brand and marketing audit, as we call it, as it appears that the company is moving into different markets. Undergoing a rebrand is a big decision, which requires a significant investment of time and costs. So it entails a lot of risks, which need to be carefully managed. And yeah, Meta, with a market cap of what, almost $600 billion, the amount of research and risk is really enormous. So I think definitely they would have carried out substantive market research to understand its place in the market. Because if it's not done, it's incredibly hard to stay competitive, especially when Facebook may face the risk of losing some of its goodwill due to customer confusion, for example. Some of the implications are legal. For example, trademark infringement claims. Prior to any rebranding, companies should always conduct prior rights research to ensure if there's any trademark applications that are in the process, whether the goods and services registered are similar to other companies that have registered, and so on. Difficulties may and eventually reflect the bottom line, I think, as it will be necessarily necessary to reflect changes in how Meta operates, such as, you know, your customer base, the product lines, and the marketplace. If there are any changes in the business entity, brands will need to review possible tax consequences related to any asset transfers from your old identity to your new identity. It also depends on the country you're operating from, right? So on one last note, you know, versus brick and mortar dependent businesses, the costs that go into rebranding business collaterals may be less of an issue as managing changes on digital platforms, which from my point of view is logistically less complex.
Okay. When is a brand change not a good idea?
Rebranding is never a good idea if you want to cover up and ignore mistakes that have hurt or undermined people. For example, the public, your consumers, stakeholders, and so on. Using Meta as an example, you know, their brand change may be ill-timed as a move, but as I've mentioned previously, it seems to be strategic. However, we've seen in the news Meta has alienated some of its users, of course, due to data privacy scandals, this huge outrage over algorithms that encourage, you know, harmful content in during the pandemic. So it's hard to imagine that consumers, especially the younger ones that Facebook and Instagram Meta hopes to capture, will be, you know, any more persuaded to commit to the company's new brand. We've also seen regional and local brands during the pandemic come under immense fire for publicly, for example, degrading women, mistreating foreign labor, and even culture misappropriation. And these allegations are very serious and takes time to address. So going through a sudden brand change is unwise. Right? There might have been a time when in the past when corporate makeover was effective at changing public opinion. But today's customers are a little bit more savvy. When business leaders want to change their company's identity or reposition their business, they usually go, okay, let's change communications. Let's focus on external messaging, such as through a new name, a logo, a campaign. But you have to remember that these kind of surface level changes are relatively easy to make, but it's really a lot more difficult to make real changes to the business and company culture, because this requires a lot of time and, most importantly, authenticity from the leaders driving the rebranding exercise is really not an easy task, but critical.
Okay then, Alina, can you give us some examples of brands that have changed their name to avoid legal issues or other complications?
There are quite a lot of brands out there that have changed their name due to legal issues and a lot of challenges. And a lot of the challenges are very image driven. Let's start with our favorite fried chicken brand, KFC. You know, that name change stemmed from trademark issues and licensing fee challenges because the state of Kentucky trademarked its name. So therefore, anyone using the word Kentucky for business reasons would have to pay licensing fees to the state. And that name change was due to money. I'm sure some of us remember the cool yellow band by Lance Armstrong. He founded his foundation called the Lance Armstrong Foundation. So that brand had to change to the Livestrong Foundation because, of course, he was found or outed for the use of performance enhancing drugs, which clearly states big issues for the brand. We also know Jeff Bezos, yes, Amazon. They actually changed their name from Kadabra, which is short for the magic word abacadabra. So his team actually said that word cadaver, which sounds like Kadabra, is actually a technical term for the dead body. So it's a very negative connotation, and hence the brand name change. We can also look at Philip Morris, right? Huge, big tobacco company. They had so many issues, legal actions, public relation disasters. So they rebranded their name to Atria Group in the year 2000, sometime there. And of course, it's a clear move to distance themselves from bad publicity. And of course, to stop that negative image to continue further.
Mm-hmm. So in line with that, right, are there any companies that have rebranded and then reversed their decision?
Most reverse decisions, I feel, are less damaging as they're more related to visual rebranding, right? More creative as well. If we were looking through a retail lens, there was an incident. There was a time when PepsiCo decided to rebrand Tropicana, right? And what they did was they replaced this, the iconic orange with a glass of orange juice. So this created a lot of confusion in the market, which eventually led to a significant drop in offtake. And a lot of people also thought that it cheapened the brand, so they changed it back, right? Another brand that we may be familiar with is MasterCard, right? The iconic two colored circles that look like a Venn diagram logo. They recreated a logo with an additional circle that was very, very vague. It had shadows and the gradients were not well done. So that confused a lot of customers as well. So those are usually examples, as I've mentioned, very visual in terms of, challenges or, mistakes that companies have made when it comes to rebranding.
Okay, stay on the phone with us, please, Alina. We're going to be asking you a few more questions after the break. Folks, we're on the phone line with the founder and brand advisor at Coach and Coach at Yellow Tree Malaysia, Alina Abdullah. We're speaking about rebranding and perhaps when rebranding exercises have not gone according to plan. If you have any feedback for us, if you have any questions, let us know via WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Twitter, we are at BFM Radio. We're going to take a short break with some music from The Undertones and Teenage Kids here on BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned to Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Big Front Man. BFM 89.9.
Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Christine Wong.
We're still on the phone line with Alina Abdullah. She's the founder, brand advisor and coach at Yellow Tree Malaysia. We're speaking to her about rebranding exercises and how, you know, maybe you could get your rebranding exercise correct for you and all of your stakeholders. Now, Alina, we've got a few more questions for you before we let you go. And I guess one of the important things for me is I'd like to know how a rebranding exercise affects employees, and you know, and how is that handled internally?
I think rebranding does affect employees, and because you see, being attached to a brand that you work for creates a sense of pride, love, and attachment, you know, depending on how long you've been with a company. So depending on the scale of the branding exercise, it is critical to brief your employees, right? What does this mean? I mean, don't let them find out through the grapevine or worse, through a media announcement, right? I believe a significant rebranding exercise can affect employees' morale. So the best way to manage this is really through empathy, right? Rebrand through empathy, because essentially it is the ability to identify, you know, their emotional attachment to your brand. You must understand the reasons behind that connection, so that you can respond to them effectively and appropriately, right? You can plan this in phases through human interaction, you know, events. And now, of course, you have to move those events online, introduce the new vision and mission and values of that exercise, the branding exercise that you're going through, without rushing the process, because I think that people can really sense when you're rushing a process for, you know, just for the sake of it. Rebranding well and authentically is more than a business decision, right? So not every leader is prepared to do that. So you must handle that with empathy and a great deal of care with employees.
Mm-hmm. And also when rebranding, how do you make sure that your current customers aren't thrown off by the change as well?
I mean, you really don't want to throw off your current consumers or customers. I've been through a few frequent rebranding exercises, and this can range from, you know, logo changes, packaging changes, image changes. It's really important to understand your customer touch points, right? And identify where you need to spend more time in and to do it with care. So for example, for retail products, right, the brand's point of contact can be in store, right, on shelf or on e-commerce and social media platforms. So when you plan for such changes, it needs to be seamless, right? And it needs to be orchestrated strategically, right? So people can see it, oh, it's they're doing this rebranding exercise on all the platforms that they are they're seen in. I think transition is the key word, yeah, because humans are not used to sudden changes because it creates a lot of confusion. And we've seen through a lot of case studies that that's usually the issue. So while it can be tempting to make grand changes that will shock the market, I think it's not wrong to subtly change your, you know, packaging, logo, and even if it's communication style. I believe it is a more comfortable approach, and such shock will less likely alienate your customer base because you don't want to affect sales at the end of the day. I believe in knowing your consumer well as well, right? Because perhaps the most important step is research. You know, you can do so via focus groups, and research has developed in such fantastic and, you know, ways now, you know, with digitalization coming into the picture. So what you can do is bring together your most loyal fans and those who you want to attract, you know, with your new rebranding exercise. So, you know, see how they react to your rebranding plans, because that in itself is already an answer to whether you're going to throw them off.
Okay, I've got one final question for you then. How do you ensure to stakeholders that rebranding is a positive change and not just a form of damage control?
This is definitely a big challenge for a lot of brands these days, right? And I think the more technical solution for this is to allow stakeholders to see And understand the benefits of branding versus not rebranding, right? You can give them examples of best practices in your industry or even outside your industry to convince them of proven success, because ultimately they will also wonder, you know, why should we put so much effort in this rebranding exercises if it doesn't help me and us, right? You know, tell them how it affects their goals and you know, how much they earn, because the money is always a very good way to convince, you know, people. What I would like to highlight is, look, you know, you need to be authentic in a rebranding exercise, because brand authenticity is so crucial. A brand must be a promise delivered authentically, right? And leaders driving this rebranding exercise must walk the talk. For the long run, right? For the long haul. Because they must show consumers and stakeholders that there is a reason to believe for this rebranding exercise. Because I think, you know, your bursts of PR write-ups and orchestrated photo ops just won't do anymore, especially in the digital world where everything is so transparent. You know, follow through this, and I'm positive you'll see good results, you know, with your people and stakeholders. And, finally, timing plays an important role in perception, because if this rebranding exercise is planned, people can see, you know, the brand's intention to change and the leader's intention to change, and hopefully for the better. Because when you do rebranding exercises on a whim, it really does create negative perception with stakeholders.
Thank you so much, Alina. That was Alina Abdullah, the founder, brand advisor and coach over at Yellow Tree Malaysia. Their brand advisory is specializing in consultancy and training services. Today, we've been discussing what happens when rebranding doesn't necessarily go so well, and how, if you are rebranding, some of the steps that you should probably take in order to make sure that it does have a positive impact on your stakeholders. Anyway, it's pretty much time for us to wrap up here on Enterprise Biz Bytes, but of course we will be back same time, same place tomorrow. And if you did miss any of this show, don't forget you can download the podcast. It's available from bfm.my or from the BFM app, which is available the Apple App Store or Google Play. Don't go anywhere, because coming up after the break, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. The advent of the pandemic and its economic impact has brought about interesting times in the construction sector. As the government tightens its expenditure, the era of huge mega projects seems to be coming to an end. How will construction players pivot and adapt to that new environment? Coming up on the Breakfast Grill replay, it is Ng Wai Ho, the Managing Director of SIAB Holdings. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. To take us up there, we've got some music from Ocean Colour Scene with the Riverboat Song. On behalf of myself and Chris, we'll see you again tomorrow here on Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Enterprise Biz Bytes was presented by Allianz Malaysia, empowering businesses to build confidence in tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.